A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
ね、見えないよ。
What's good, internet? It is January 2nd, 2017. We made it to 2017. 2016 didn't kill us all. I am Austin Walker, your host. I am coming to you on this recording. We did not do it live today because none of us have energy and because we're technically off today. Joining me, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, hi.
And Danica Harrod.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hi, hi.
Hey, hey, and hi, hi.
The traditional waypoint greeting. This is... how's it going? We made it through. We did it. We got through holidays. We got through our end of year stuff. I almost canceled this show this morning because it's it's like the first full day off I'll have had in forever. But I thought, you know what? This is going to take like 45 minutes. Let's just knock it out real quick.
Let's just do it for the fans. For the people.
Hashtag for the culture, you know?
That's right.
30 minutes compared to Austin's proposed 30 seconds.
I thought about, like, let me just do a 30-second thing. And I might do this at some point anyway, like, the next time that there's a reason to miss an episode. We're like, so, like, early on in the Beastcast, we hit a point where it was like, okay, what do we do for this holiday episode? And then we ended up doing the fiasco game, which I think was really fun and good.
Oh, yeah.
But Jeff Gerspin, like, didn't sit us down, but, like, very much had this, like, serious, like, listen, this is your one chance to make it clear that you're allowed to miss a week, like, to your audience. Like, this is the one chance that you get to be like, no, we don't have to hit every possible episode. And as, like, a person who believes that rest and relaxation are important and that, like, work shouldn't consume everyone's life, I do believe that. This is a do as I say, not as I do situation.
Right.
Or, like, the reason I'm working as hard as I fucking am right now is because I know that that's how I guarantee the resources necessary to give us all easier lives in 3 months. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
Is that, like, when it's budget approval time, you know, someone, they know I've been working. You know, that's all I'm saying. So, and that might not work out. They might, you know, I might, who knows? I could explode by then from working so much. But I'm off today, and I'm just here to talk about video games with my friends. Talk about video games.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And just life. You know, how were your holiday, quote unquote, breaks?
Well, my cats almost got locked out of, my cat sitter, my dear friend, almost got locked out of my apartment on Christmas Day, and we needed to call the emergency locksmith. I was very worried about my kitties.
Oh, buddy.
But you know what? It was a Christmas miracle, and everything worked out, and they got fed.
How expensive was this Christmas miracle?
It was like $170.
Oh, my God.
Ooh, Merry Christmas to the locksmith.
Yeah. They had a great Christmas. Empire Locksmith.
Shout out.
They're very nice. They were very nice. They were very helpful. Thank you, Empire Locksmith.
God. Well, beyond your cat sitter being locked out of the apartment, how was the rest of your holidays?
Really lovely. I played a lot of games. I played a lot of The Last Guardian, which has been amazing. I really like it.
What do you think of it?
Despite some issues, for sure. But
is that something that would have been in contention if you'd played it a little bit earlier?
I think so.
And,
but
like,
it comes with
made it, but.
Yeah. I mean, it really might have been because I think it's actually incredibly special. I think it's. You know, it's doing all those things that you want sort of a Team ICO game to do. It's doing the sort of the heartfelt connection with an animal character, which, you know, sort of, I guess Yorda wasn't an animal, but, you know, the sort of heartfelt connection to another mind.
It's
another
like she also was not like a super well-developed character in her own right.
Yeah.
Though, so.
I remember getting so frustrated, like guiding her around from time to time.
Yeah.
So.
Totally. Totally.
I'm looking forward to getting frustrated with Last Guardian also.
Yeah, which I really love all the stuff with the animal is amazing. The puzzles are really good. The architecture of the levels is really amazing. But everything people are saying about the camera and controls being hot garbage is also true.
That's the part that I have. Like, so there's kind of like two bits of frustration inside of The Last Guardian. Or there's three things for me. There's three bits of frustration. One of them is like just a matter of context and time, which is, Inside didn't make my top 10 list, but I'd written next to Inside that the piece I was going to, like the little like 300-word thing I was going to write about Inside was that Inside is why Last Guardian didn't make the list for me, because it was tight and short, and each segment was focused. Each like screen had an idea, and then you pursued that idea and then moved on. Whereas Last Guardian is this like sprawling thing where there are sections where it's like, I fucking get it, the eyes. Like, you move the eyes. I get it. You have to, my friend, the Last Guardian, Mr. Catbird, the Last Guardian, can't look at the weird eyes. Otherwise the Catbird Trico gets all sad. And so you have to get rid of the eyes. Like, I get it. I've done it 30 times. Like, it's not 30, but like, it's a lot. And it goes. So that was one of the thoughts I had. The other sort of frustration is the camera thing, which there's no defense of for me. Like, it's just like, there's not, please figure out cameras. You have to do better than this.
It was 2016.
You had 10 years.
Yeah. You really need.
You had so long.
Yep.
Yeah. It's so bad. And it's so frustrating because it's like, I really love what this is doing otherwise, but
right. So
man.
Then the third frustration is the one that I will defend. And actually, Paolo Pedercini from Mole Industria, which is kind of like a very kind of politics focused independent game, studio, wrote up his top 10 games of the year, or his top favorite games of the year. And his point on The Last Guardian is like really fucking good. I'm just going to read this. This is from moleindustria.org, moleindustria.org. I've been pointing at how animal companionship in video games tends to be informed by a utilitarian and reductionist logic. Pokemon are both weapons and collectibles existing in a fictional world designed to naturalize this instrumental relationship. Neko Atsume is an addicting conditioning device dispensing immaterial cuteness for your time and money. Virtual pets are nothing but lightly dressed variables banking on our tendency to attribute feelings and thought to artificial entities, the Tamagotchi effect. The Last Guardian is an epic tale of domestication and healing that manages to transcend this instrumental relationship. Gameplay-wise, it's an action-adventure with simple puzzles that can be solved indirectly by indirectly manipulating a griffin-like creature named Trico. However, there is no way to see the companion as just a way to reach a platform or as a formal constraint like the helpless girl in Ico, the game's direct predecessor. Trico's behavior and characterization is vivid and subtle. It develops over time and yet stays unmistakably other. Trico resists direct control, misunderstands you, and then surprises you by autonomously navigating the impossible architecture. It's often a frustrating experience, but frustration is an integral part of the aesthetics of the game. And for me, like, it's also an integral part of relationships and of relationships with non-human entities, but like,
yeah,
especially just in general, just like all relationships are negotiated. All relationships that you have in your life outside of like total domination are instances where you give some and you take some, and that is something I've never seen done in the game, which tends to be a lot more binary than that. Like, you eventually learn how to game it, and you sort of learn how to game Trico, but like, Trico's gonna do what Trico's gonna do. So
yeah,
and I like that a lot.
Yeah, I love that frustration. About the game.
That frustration I love. It's the same frustration as any pet owner has ever experienced, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like as a pet owner forever, I will feel a big connection to this animal.
I would just, there's one part that frustration in a good way actually really, really got me the other night.
Ooh.
And of course, I'm playing with my puppy on my lap, who is like the worst. I love him, but he's the worst. And there's a part where Trico gets his tail caught in a door, and he's like in pain, or I'm gendering Trico, I don't know. They're in pain and they're crying and they're moaning and whining. And I got so flustered at the idea of like, oh no, my pet is hurt. I can't let this happen. And the camera's going all over the place, and I'm like, fuck this camera. And I'm, getting all flustered and actually like doing poorly at the game because I'm so personally hurt by the idea of my little pet being my big pet being hurt. And it was actually like a really kind of great moment because, you know, Trico actually ends up sort of protecting you in that moment too, because there's other, these sort of soldier things that, that kind of come in. But it's this great yeah. time where it's like, oh my God, it's making you flustered because
yeah,
of this.
Totally. And
sounds like that Austin Walker, yeah. that Austin Walker
empathy problem.
Empathy. Yeah.
That's true. It's yep. really hard to see Trico get hurt because like you're helpless to help in yeah, a direct yeah. way. So that's the other thing that's happening there, I guess, right? Is like, not only are you helpless to like say, like, Trico, just come this way. Like, just please jump up there.
Do the
there.
Thing.
Yeah. You're also helpless to like directly intercede on Trico's behalf when they're attacked, right? Like, yeah. you have to solve a puzzle to let Trico defend themselves, which is an interesting thing power-wise too, right? Like, this is a relationship you have with something that could kill you. Like, that could instantly just destroy you, and that is a power relationship that exists in the world and is very complex. So
I'm Danica, excited to play.
Yeah. Did you play anything else over the break?
I put in about 30 hours into Terraria,
latest
awesome.
release.
Awesome.
No, I played a ton of Firewatch also, but
exclusive.
And I played a bunch of the new Shantae Half Genie Hero, nice. Which is like super awesome. But
did you did you beat Terraria yet?
Yeah, I beat the moon boss. Like, I think my girlfriend and I have beat the moon boss like 5 times.
Oh,
but
okay.
we've been playing this game for like, I had never played Terraria until this year.
Okay.
Same with Minecraft, because I just was
big
like,
year.
Yeah, it was just like never my thing
yeah.
to like sit down at my computer and like get heavy into like building games. That yeah. was just like never my thing. And Terraria has been like amazing, and I keep beating the moon boss, and I'm just so strong.
You're deep into it.
I'm so strong. Yeah. And my girlfriend and I's names in there. My name is Carl and her name is Marks.
So. Oh God.
Wow. Wow.
Fighting the system
on brand.
As we go.
Yeah. You know what? We have to get together this year and beat the moon boss. You know,
we
that's
should.
All I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's time to organize against the moon boss and let that dude
gosh.
Know what's what.
Correct. We gotta stick our hand to the man, and
that's
that
right.
man is the moon boss.
Uh-huh. So wait, how is Shantae? So Shantae is a like really pretty platformer where you play
yeah,
as
by
genie
way forward.
Lady, you're a genie.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's a half genie. So
oh,
it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen Inuyasha anime.
What's
about
that? Tell
half
me.
Demon.
Wait, no, wait. Sorry. Tell me everything you know about Inuyasha.
I know a lot. But Shantae is
it's
just
not
like
a
this...
joke, damn it. Then tell the people what Inuyasha is.
Inuyasha is a story about a girl named Kagome who falls down a well and goes back in time to feudal Japan, where she finds a boy stuck to a tree by a bunch of arrows, and she pulls the arrows out, and it's this half demon Inuyasha, and follows their journey together.
It just journeys
and
their follows, yeah.
Just journeys their follow. You know, it's
early.
A holiday.
None of us had coffee. It's a lot.
I'm chugging iced coffee. I'll be working the rest of the day, so I'm just getting all this out now.
Good.
So yeah, I played Shantae, and that's really fun. I love platformers, so those are always fun. I'm having a really hard time in this one level right now where I just like, it's when you die, like, obviously I sound like a drama queen. When you die, you start the whole level over, and damn it, it hurts. It hurts me because you have to like use her special powers to like climb up places, and there's multiple ways you can go, and it's just like I'm in a really frustrating level, but it's really fun. So
I think what's always attracted me to that series has been way forward's like artistic flair. Like, they've always mm-hmm. been able to give on whatever platform, going back to when this was like a GBA game, I want to say, like a lot of character mm-hmm. through animation and stuff. But now it looks like even screenshots now look kind of really striking in a way that previously it only looked great in motion. So I'm curious about it.
It's looking real good. It's looking much better. And the music is awesome too. There's like a lot of random vocal tracks, and
vocal tracks aren't used enough in games.
They're not
a thing. Because when they're when they are, like, we always just, like, immediately give them value on novelty alone, like in
and you remember them forever, right, like totally. who's not singing Snake Eater at least once a week?
Absolutely, all the time, actually. Whenever I climb a ladder, I sing Snake Eater.
Yeah, whenever I eat a tree frog, I'm singing Snake Eater.
It's like we're like the shopkeeper song, Crypt of the Necrodancer. Like anytime anybody uses a vocal track, like especially original vocals, it is like immediately a meme, a gaming meme, and you know, I'm just saying people should use those more because they're cool.
I mean, I'm into it. I'm trying to sing Still Alive, but like officially.
Officially, you're gonna be the next GLaDOS.
Yes.
Great. I finally, after putting it on my top 10 list, I finally played Hitman yesterday and the day before. It's like,
yeah, you've been playing it. I've been seeing it pop up on my Steam.
It's true. I really like Hitman. It turns out that Hitman, the game I put in my number 10 favorite game of the year spot because I watched it a fucking ton, it's really good. And like that was actually a surprise to me in some way that like I learned the joy of hitting people in the face with blunt objects in Hitman from watching people do it for hundreds of hours or whatever. Yeah. Not hundreds, but like for dozens of hours. And you think you've learned it from that. And then you hit a man in the face with a fire extinguisher.
In real life.
Well, in my real Hitman. I do it for real. I do it hands on. And it's like, whoa, that felt really good. And it's like, there's a disconnect between the joy you see in someone else hitting someone in the face with a fire extinguisher or a hammer and the joy of you doing it. And then like the other thing is just like, you go from being the observer who is excited by what nonsense. So I was playing it with a friend who was watching me play. And so that also meant I was encouraged to be the person who played it up for just like, check out this plan I got. And like, all right, what's your fucking stupid ass plan, Austin? And like, I'm going to throw a coin into this bathroom with the door open. And I'm going to hide in this cabinet that's in this bathroom. And then one dude, the guy who has the disguise I need, is going to come in here. And I'm going to hit him over the head with this fire extinguisher. And I'm going to get his costume. And that is not what happened. What happened was three people came in that room. And all of them got hit over the head with a fire extinguisher very loudly.
Oh my gosh.
And more people saw. And I managed to get out alive. But like, it was like those sorts of like rolling comedy capers is just like the fucking best. Like that's my favorite thing about Hitman is that it's a very funny game, and that is not what you would think about a game that is called Hitman 2016. So
I haven't talked to one person who's played it who hasn't liked it.
It's super good. I also just generally like the structure of it a lot. This is all like old hat for people who listen to a bunch of gaming podcasts and who have, you know, whether you're coming to us via Dime Bomb or Idle Thumbs, you've heard some deep Hitman talk. You know about that Hitman. But I do just want to shout out the escalation missions really quick because those are things that didn't get a ton of coverage on other sites. And the way escalation missions work, like you might already know what this is already, but you might not know how deep these go or how weird they can get. So an escalation mission is a thing that where it's like, okay, you revisit one of the story maps and you're given a different target, and then you have to do that. You have to complete that target with the way that they tell you to do it. And then you just start over from the beginning and do it again with an added step afterwards. So for instance, on the very first escalation mission is you sneaking onto this like mock ship that is like the training zone. And you go in and you have to just like kill a guard with a kitchen knife while dressed as another guard. And then that steps up until it's like, okay, you have to kill that guy with a kitchen knife while you are dressed as a guard. You also have to kill another dude, like a named character from the main story mission there, while dressed as a yacht, like, official, like a, not a yacht official, a yacht.
An
like
officer?
Crew, an, a like crewman. Yeah. It was like one of the crewmen. And you can do that with whatever weapon you want. If you're spotted by the cameras, you have 2 minutes to delete the footage. All of the crew members can see through all of your disguises. Like it adds nothing like that.
Oh my gosh.
And like bit by bit, it gets really good. And like, and then the thing that is really great about it is like you really learn these levels inside and out from this. But then some of the later ones end up being just like completely different things. Like the first one that I did on the Paris map was like, the first step was like, all right, get in this room and steal the thing that's in this safe. And like, yeah, like, I'm a hitman. Like, yeah, but go steal this, the thing that's in the safe. Yeah, but like, I'm supposed to kill people. Like, no. Just go in there and... Spoilers, I definitely still killed some people trying to get what was in that safe. Double spoilers, it was vodka.
Wow.
But then, like, it ends up being like, oh, well, the next step is you have to kill this dude while this dude who happens to be near there while dressed as an auction, like, attendant who, you know, he's part of this big auction. It's like, it's a really cool way of letting, of slowly introducing you to not only, like, the cool mechanics of, like, not being seen and using disguise as well, but just, like, here's what the levels are. Like, you're going to get super intimate with these levels, and that is not a thing that you do in most games. Like, most games, you go through a level, and then you're done, and you move the fuck on. And I like that there was a game this year that was just like, no, like, here's six levels. Learn them.
There was a part in the... Ed Smith wrote a piece for us on sort of violence in games in 2016, and he sort of had an anecdote about one of the kills in Hitman is you have to impersonate somebody's psychiatrist. And
yeah,
then
so I did that one.
Okay, cool. It just sounded kind of amazing. Like, oh, you have to listen to his issues before you can kill him.
So
kind of
it actually ended up... So again, I've watched probably 60 hours of Hitman. Like, in terms of like TV shows I've watched this year, like coming home and like hopping on Skype with a friend and like watching Hitman has been a thing. Or like dozing off while watching Hitman is a thing in my life, which is strange. And despite that, and despite the fact that I've seen so much of this game, there is still every once in a while something that's deeply surprising, because so many people go through things in a similar fashion. I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm at the Paris show. That means I'm gonna dress up like Helmut Kruger, who is this like supermodel who looks sort of like Mr. Hitman. And so if you take his costume, you can kind of go anywhere because he's a supermodel, and supermodels go wherever they want. Like as a
deep commentary there.
It's true. Yeah. And in the Sapienza map, which is the like Italian, like, you know, Southern European seaside city, it's beautiful. It's my favorite thing in the world. You always see people kind of go into the main like villa where where a lot of stuff happens in a very similar way. I'm losing my voice. It's bad.
It's been a week. Yeah,
it's been a week. I took up smoking. I didn't take up smoking, but it sounds like I did. There's this whole other plot line where, like, normally the way you get in is like, oh, I am going to impersonate a flower delivery guy or a chef, or I'll just hop over the fence because of the way the level is laid out. But I found a whole other route that was about becoming this guy's psychiatrist. And this dude, I'm going to spoil this one level, this one little thing in Hitman, because it's really hard to miss. Or it's really easy to miss, rather. This guy you're going to assassinate has been like distraught for a while. He's like a criminal who is like hiding underneath his mansion a bioterror lab where they're developing they're developing a virus that can be used like a sniper bullet, where like it's designed to kill one person and you just deploy it anywhere in the world and eventually it gets to them. Because, like, it's just going to spread until it hits them.
It's the red button.
It's the red button.
It really
yes,
is.
That's exactly it. And so you have to go kill him and somebody else and blah, blah, blah. And to kill him normally, you just kind of, like, there's a bunch of different ways to do it. But the ways that you tend to do it is like, oh, I'm going to utilize the fact that his mom died recently and he's sad about it to, like, lead him away from other people. Or, like, to play his old home movies and, like, distract him that way. Or kill him with an exploding golf ball. There's a bunch of ways you could do it. But the way I did it was I dressed up like his new psychiatrist who he hadn't met yet and like had a session with him. And in that session, he reveals that he is the one who killed his mother. And like, whoa, like that's, I've watched that guy a dozen times get killed and have always known that he's been sad about his dead mom, but never knew that like he is the one who killed her by smothering her with a pillow. And then I killed him by smothering him with a pillow. So, you know.
Wow, you got him back. Karma's a bitch.
It is. Shout outs to Ma. Like, that's, I'm pointing
Sorry,
a point
mom.
Up to you. Like, Italian mom, you're the one. You're the one. I'm doing this for you.
Oh,
Hitman's
man.
Good. So I'm pretty happy that I've actually gone back and checked that out. I played a little more like Dragon Quest Builders and I enjoyed that. And I played Doom. Patrick isn't here, but when he's back,
good.
We can talk about Doom.
Wow, you played Doom.
I did play Doom, but.
Doing your homework, professor.
I'll transition into our second topic, I didn't put Doom on my top 10 list. And I'm curious for both of you, like, so Danica, you didn't do a top 10 list for us because of how busy you are. But I'm curious from you, Danica, what games would have been on your top 10 list or on your top list? And then Danielle, like, what barely missed that top 10 list for you?
Oh, yeah. I've got a bunch. But Danica, you should go first because this is your opportunity to tell the world what you would have picked.
I feel like I wasn't prepared for, like, top 10, but, like, my favorite games of the year are probably Overwatch.
Sure.
Kirby Robobot.
Oh.
What was up? Tell us about Kirby Robobot, because that's one I, like, heard people talk about and never got around to checking out.
For starters, I had never played a Kirby game until last year. Okay. And since then, I've played a bunch. And Triple Deluxe is, like, one of my favorites, which was the 3DS.
I heard that was really good.
It's a good game.
Yeah, it's extremely good. So Robobot is pretty much the same as Kirby Triple Deluxe, but you get, like, this huge mech suit, and you're just, like, a giant robot, which is a dream for me. And you can, like, punch cars and make cars explode by punching them, and it's just very heartwarming. I love Kirby games.
Wait, like, you can punch cars to make them explode. It's very heartwarming.
It's heartwarming because you're watching like Waddle Dee driving a car, and like Waddle Dee is like really cute, but he can hurt you if you run into him, and Kirby is like this cute little, you know, cute little pink thing in a giant robot suit, and watching Kirby punch Waddle Dee in a bus and making that bus explode makes my heart, do loop de loop.
At cars, is it Waddle Dee or Vegeta?
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
This is a hard question.
I feel like I just have to give that to Vegeta.
Word. Yeah, Vegeta. Has that nice pink shirt. So
yeah.
I'm gonna give it to him.
Some other favorites are probably Hyper Light Drifter.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
Thumper, which I didn't play a lot. I played a bunch of it. I'm not very good at it. Little better than our pal Chief Keef. But
listen, if you had to play it in VR, if you could play VR.
Oh, if I played it in VR, I might throw up.
Right.
I mean, he had to play it on the phone, too, so you know.
He was taking calls.
He's a professional.
He did good.
Digitalpyramids.com.
That's right.
We need to get him to play GTA, and then I'm sure he'll kick everyone's ass.
It's actually true.
I didn't play too much Thumper, but when my girlfriend was here last, I watched her play, like, oh my God, like, almost the entire game. It was so intense. And, like, anytime I would be like, let me try, I would just die immediately. Yeah. And Firewatch is definitely another favorite. Yeah. I'm not that far in Firewatch. I'm like right when you head to Wapiti Station, but the game, I'm a wimp, and the game is making me so stressed out. Yeah. I feel like if I wasn't playing it on stream with like support from the chat and stuff, just like telling me like I'm doing a good job, I would just be stressed out and freaked out.
It's like one of the most stressful games, and like one of the things that's like wild about it is that the lineage it kind of comes from is a series of games that's also kind of stressful, but that in retrospect feels like nothing can happen to you. So when I think about like Gone Home or Dear Esther, or like, okay, like I'm going to explore this space and that is gonna be it. But despite knowing that that's where that game comes from in a sense, like not directly or anything, but like the games it hangs with are games in which I can't be touched. Firewatch feels like I'm constantly super vulnerable. It didn't make my top 10 list, but like if it did, that would be the thing I said about it. It was like, I love how vulnerable I felt. But also, like, does the world really need another dude saying that Firewatch made him feel vulnerable about like both physically and emotionally? Like, hey, that's that game. That game is about masculine vulnerability, but like, or not about, but that's one read on it.
So. I think as someone who's watched like a ton of Forensic Files, I just there were parts in that game where I was just like so freaked out just by like the quietness of the atmosphere and like things seeming stranger than they probably were or whatever else. It scared me.
What got me about Firewatch the most was the kind of like really, really sad point that love isn't enough. Like relationships are really, really hard. And even when you put the work in, even when you love someone more than anything, like I just loved how actually adult that was
as a sort of
main story point. It's just,
it's like devastating. And it's like, it's one of the most devastating lessons I've learned as an adult is that like, and I mean that from romantic love to platonic love. Like, I mean the entire spectrum of love to love about a thing and not even a person. Like, it is not enough that you are affectionate or that you hold someone in incredible esteem or that you would die for somebody. Like, it turns out that, like,
the
practicalities of life can get in the way and can not, you know, make that a smooth thing. So, it's cool that that's one of the games that came out this year, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's very good.
Love is not enough.
Okay. Yay, that was a good point for 2016, don't you think, everybody?
I feel like if I feel like if I would have played Last Guardian or Final Fantasy, those would have been on my top as well, but I just didn't get around to them, and then I got to the point where I was like, I don't know which one to get. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get both at the same time because I'll have anxiety about both sitting there and not knowing which to play. And
I almost did a list that was just also, so I did a guest list over at Giant Bomb that was like my top 10 favorite games to watch this year. But that list was almost a different list, which was top like five bits of a game that were not the whole game. For that one, I would have like definitely ended up including like a couple of different things where like I don't want to play all of this, but this one segment or this one DLC or this extra little thing is like enough to knock it into that spot. And a game you just said that I've since forgotten is would have been on that list. What were the two games you just said?
We all know it's Final Fantasy.
Right, it's Final Fantasy. Thank
you. We all know.
So the thing with Final Fantasy, the reason Final Fantasy didn't make my list was like I'm just at the point now where I'm about to get to where people say it goes bad. And I couldn't like in good conscience be like, oh, yeah, I like this game enough to put it on my list knowing that the other foot was about to drop. And, like, I might still have ended up including it there, but that was enough for me to, like, to discourage me from doing that. The other stuff that would have made it onto that, like, here are bits of games that I thought were incredible this year or, like, here's DLC or something is, like, the Division Survival DLC that we streamed a couple of weeks ago is, like, so much better than the Division base game. I think the Division base game is, like, it's pretty good. I have my issues with it. But the like the mechanics are all pretty stock standard and like rewarding by the end of the game especially. But that survival DLC is so good. And if you haven't seen that, you should go to twitch.tv/waypoint and we have an archive there. We're looking into archiving it onto our YouTube and to our like Vice video player soon. But then there's also The Witness, which I like Danielle put it on my like I can't deal with this list in which you know I completely completed The Witness minus the environmental puzzles. I did every puzzle except for all of the hidden like you find the lines that are in the world, so I you know enjoyed it enough to do that, but the I had lots of issues with its self-seriousness and with its notions of the philosophical, especially speaking of things that will not save us, it's a notion that rationality and pure reason will save us. That like that is the thing that is going to let us stand up. And, like we almost instantly moved into a world in which that was, you know, exhibited to be false, right? Like pointing out falsehoods does not win you the day anymore. Maybe making the world such that truth matters again, might, but like that's a whole other fight that you don't win by just pointing at the facts and figures. But the two things at the end of The Witness that I adore and would have made this other list or you know if I could have found space for it on my top 10 would have made just this one segment there is you eventually open into a post-game area where you find some tape recordings that are deeply human and very like delivered really well and are real and are not just lectures and are not just like you know, famous quotes from dead people.
I think that's so awesome. On a fundamental yep. gut level, it made me so angry that that was reserved for the post game. Like, totally. Oh, only the special people can see
can,
the truth.
Can
kind
see,
of thing.
Can, like, ugh. The veil comes down, the, yeah. the armor comes down, and you can see that you bleed too. Yeah. It's a fantastic moment, and like I think that that's worth credit, but it is also so completely hidden. And then there's another hidden thing at the end, which is the challenge, the true yeah. final puzzle of the witness. Which probably took me 5 hours to complete because it is not a set puzzle. Unlike the rest of the puzzles in the game, there is no single solution for it. It is filled with it is a kind of a randomly generated or procedurally generated, not randomly generated, puzzle in which you have to bring to bear all of your knowledge about all of the different types of puzzles throughout the game to do them quickly, to evaluate which puzzles to solve in which order based on like what would be easiest for you, and then to like also quickly learn a new mechanic because one of the puzzle types in that final thing is from a puzzle is a type of puzzle you've never really encountered before.
Oh, like, interesting. Yeah.
It's do you know those extra tablets that you find sometimes in the world that are just like, oh, it's two triangles.
Yeah.
And that's it. So yeah. that is a different puzzle type that oh, is God. In the final challenge in a big weird way that involves like literally the world shifts around you as you solve it. Like opening and closing off pathways. And so it's really cool because, you know, while those puzzles each have a proper solution, the fact that you're like, okay, it's time for me to actually use all this information I learned for different challenges over and over again is to me more like what real problem solving is like, which is like, you don't have all day to sit in front of a screen and solve a single problem one at a time. Like, we move through life quickly, and if you don't stop, you know, and so, no, and you have to, you don't get the chance to stop. You actually have to, like, solve things and keep moving. And sometimes problems don't have clear solutions, and you have to, like, fuck it, go back to the drawing board, like, or I'm gonna go focus on this problem instead. And so, like, that metaphor for life and for intelligence or whatever the metaphor was trying to do was way more effective for me. So if I could put just that little element on a list, I would.
Yeah, totally.
What about you, Danielle? What games like almost made the list but didn't for you?
I have a whole list. And then there are still, of course, things I haven't played yet, like Virginia,
sure, totally.
Watch Dogs 2. Yes. Those are on the... Yep.
Those are all my cut from the... I have 11 through 20, right? Which is so easy. That's also Inside and Super Hot and Watch Dogs 2 and Overwatch and I'm just gonna say Duskers, Tokyo Mirage Sessions. Like, I loved so many games this year and
yes.
did not get a chance to talk about them, but it's those. They're good.
So much love, so little time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have like an 11 through 20, which includes things that I only dipped a toe into.
Sure.
And I know I love them, but I just literally like 30 minutes or less. Played them, yeah. which is Blood yeah. and Wine for Witcher 3 and Hyper Light Drifter, which I thought was beautiful right. and amazing, and I watched a bunch of it, and I played a little of it, but like...
It's hard to make that...
It's hard to be like, this was my number 7 game when it's like, I played 15 minutes. You know,
the
it's
other
just
thing
hard
is like,
to...
It's easy to find reasons to excise something from a list like this, which is like, alright, how do I narrow this thing down to 10? Okay, well, I guess I didn't really play enough of that for it to count, so I'm gonna... Yeah, bye. And that's a useful thing to do for sure.
But even though it's like painful because it's one of those things
yes.
that's like, I know if I got through this game and beat it, it would probably be a definite top 10, you know? And so it's like, oh, God damn it, you know?
Totally.
But I'll just go through real quick. Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor is on there.
Yeah,
loved
I finally played that.
Game.
I played
yeah.
that this week. I played that on the bus ride back from and then went back to it like later to finish it. I love that game. That
yeah.
game is like legitimately really cool. Can you talk a bit about what it is? Because we
yeah,
wrote about it a couple months ago, but like I don't know that everybody knows what it is.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's basically a little it's almost like Cart Life in a little weird alien city kind of thing.
Yeah.
You're this little android janitor who has like kind of a really crappy life, and you know the whole thing is a commentary on sort of what it is to be kind of repressed, or
yeah.
you know living in a big city where life is sort of passing you by and you're just sort of scraping through. So you're a janitor and you have to clean up people's garbage and you never really make enough money, and there's all these sort of vendors and sellers who have all these nice things that you can never afford. Yeah. And a really weird and interesting thing that I thought was cool. Actually, in my previous job, I actually did an interview with the developers about this, but there's sort of a pretty serious commentary on being trans in the game, because every now and then the world starts going all weird and bizarre if you don't shift your gender, and you need money for that too.
Your perspective gets all blurry, and it's hard to read anything, and it's just miserable. And you need money to do that.
Yeah, which I thought was rad and pretty thoughtfully implemented. Like, it was like a pretty cool thing. Like, they don't really advertise that that's in the game. It's not really like what you go into thinking like, oh, this is definitely a trans narrative, and then it's just a thing that happens in the world. It's just a fact of life.
One of the things that's really cool is that, like, when you this is the thing that, like, I guess
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Characters, like, your character just does this every few days. They need to gender shift. There's not like a ton of lore about, is this part of their alien species or their android programming, or no.
It's just a thing.
It's a reality of their life.
Yeah.
Which I like. And then two, like, it's actually really joyous when you get to do it. Like, it's like you are now, your gender is now blank, and you feel amazing. And also, their genders are not limited to our boring human genders. Their genders include things like prismatic glyphs and Susan Sarandon.
Oh my god.
So I was Susan Sarandon for a while. It was pretty good. So that to me is like the thing that really stood out about Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor, which is like, you are broke and miserable, and like nothing, you can't ever afford anything. You could barely afford to eat. You have to learn how to game the system to like really make ends meet. And also, it's really pretty and fun. And
I want to play it now. You guys are making me want to get it right now.
The city is like filled with so much life. On festival days, people are playing music everywhere, and like you meet a couple of people who are like totally chill, where they're just like, man, hey, like, how you doing? Like, make sure you avoid the cops today. Like, yeah, I got you. Don't worry, I will. And like, there's just enough of that blend of complete oppressive, like, city life barely scraping by with like, of course I live in the city. Like, of course I'm going to move to where all of my friends are. And that is a combination, that juxtaposition is really powerful.
So good.
And it's just like, the aesthetic is just on point. So.
Yeah. Damn, I'm playing that today.
You should.
I'm gonna get it.
All right, so Diary of Spaceport Janitor. What else?
Goner's on there, which we played a whole bunch of.
Oh shit, I forgot. Yeah, that.
About Goner. I know.
I bought that the moment I got home the day we played it on stream, and I put like 20 hours into
it.
I played it so much. It's so good. I forgot about that. That's probably one of my top 10. I'm a simple gal.
No, it's great. Like, it's
shooting.
A good game.
You like shooting in
colors. I like shooting. I'm bad at it.
You get your
like
corn
it.
Pellets. You know, corn.
I love the corn. I know. Everything Danielle said, like, was so in the game. I just continued with it. I'm like, that's corn.
There it is. I got super hot and inside on there. We already chatted about those a little bit. There's a couple of like weirder little ones that I also really like. Burly Men at Sea, I thought was like a really cool little sort of storybook game. And there's a game called The Final Station that didn't get a lot of hype this year, but I really liked it. I thought that game
was going to be a different thing than it was.
Me too. It's almost like a really very story-based sort of pixel art. I guess it's kind of a zombie narrative, but it's a little more thoughtful than sort of what you generally think of with that. It was like a very somber and serious little kind of short story. Like, there was also some shooting mechanics and survival stuff going on, but you were this little train conductor in this sort of apocalyptic world, and you had to try to get people across, basically, to the next station, to the final station, that sort of thing, which I just really dug it. You know, it wasn't the sort of thing that blew my mind or anything, but I just sort of appreciated that it was this sort of somber, serious little take on this.
I wish there either hadn't been combat or...
Yeah. True.
So, like, the combat in it is, like, side-scrolling and you have guns and crowbars and, like, you swing to hit people or you shoot to shoot people. I think there's crowbar. There might not be a crowbar. But there's a melee attack of some sort and then a gun. And... It is also, like, you watch that trailer, and because of the world we live in of games, I imagined that, like, it was going to be an FTL. I thought it was going to be a roguelike, right? I thought it was going to be, like, oh, you get on your train, and you run people, on these missions, and then maybe if you get out, it's, like, into big procedurally generated cities or something. But it's actually, like, really firmly designed, like, and that's not a bad thing. Like, the handcrafted, like, oh, okay, this is an encounter that has been hand-designed by somebody. But... I ended up getting into encounters that were just, like, not super fun.
Yeah.
Like, the gunplay stuff of just, like, I don't... This is a slog, and I know I have to get through this.
Yeah.
Like, I have to... I can't just re-roll. And that eventually pushed me off of it. But I think that, like you, like, it's really somber and smart and, like... Sorry. Like you thought. Not like you, Danielle.
Like you. Somber.
Somber. But smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good one. That's a good one to call out that I think definitely went under the radar a little bit.
Yeah. I've got two quick other ones. See, I told you, I have an 11 to 22, but...
Let's hear it.
There was a game called Zombie Night Terror that I also think went completely under the radar, and it was the absolute opposite. It was a 50s sci-fi, kishy kind of almost Lemmings-style game. Where it was actually really fun. It was styled after this sort of, you know, goofy sci-fi stuff. And what you had to do was infect certain people in a world, in a 2D pixel art kind of world. And there were all this sort of procedural things going on with it. And the goal was always to infect everybody in the scene. And so you would only have, like, two vials of zombie serum or whatever. And you'd have to put it in, you know, you would learn the behaviors of different kinds of people. And it was really fun. It was, like, this really fun little kind of... weird simmy thing that I don't know how many people played it, but it was very, very fun.
It looks really cool.
Yeah, it was extremely fun. I enjoyed it. And the last one, really just an honorable mention for making me laugh so much and just being wacky and fun and goofy, and that was Cluster Truck.
Sure.
We streamed that too, so, you know, we don't need to go on and on about it, but
Cluster
just
Truck
a really
was
fun, yeah.
Almost made my top 10 to watch.
Nice.
List.
Yeah.
But because, like, yeah, it's just a joy to watch people fling themselves onto a row of
it's really
trucks.
Funny.
So,
yeah,
it's a good one. It's a good list. That's shout outs to all the games that didn't make the top 10 this year. You know,
shout outs to games.
That's good. I hope 2017, like, I think looking back at this point at 2016, it feels like there's lots of, and I don't, this is not like a slam, but, like, for me, there were, like, lots of B-plus games. I was like, this is a
totally.
Good-ass game.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of good-ass games. Like, nothing really broke through and was, like, just, like, claimed me this year. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, mm-hmm. that's... I am that games. That game owns me. That is my... That's not my game. That game is...
Because you haven't played even the ocean
in.
Yet. That's
right. That's probably
oh,
why.
Yeah.
That's probably
that's it.
Why. The year that a game like that, like, wins me over that much, will be the best game that's ever come out, because I know what my own tastes are and predilections of just, like, gameplay loops. So, like, if that ever happens, like, whatever that game is, has to be the best thing ever.
But
we'll, you know, we'll see. I'm curious what 2017 is going to be like. Like, that's, it could totally be another, it could totally be a thing of, like, oh, there's a million, like, great games, but there's no, like, single thing that woos me over again. Or it could be a year where maybe there's only a handful, really. Like, who knows? I'm curious.
Yeah.
What
I mean, but what would you prefer? Having, like, a lot of games that you really enjoyed, but, you know...
Well, like, nothing that, like... Like, this is, like, 2017 is going to be a standout, or 2016 is going to be a standout year when we look back on it because of all these great games.
Yeah.
But I don't know, for me, like, I think really one of the things is, like, if Doom had won me over the way it won so many other people over, maybe. But, like, nothing on my list. I played, like, 5 hours of Doom. Like, I get
you got
it.
Enough Doom
true,
to judge.
True. But you've also heard, you've also had it, like, hammered into your brain that you
I
had to play
it. I think it's very cool.
So.
I think it's very cool. And I think it would never have landed on me the way it landed on other people.
Mm-hmm,
just because, like, I don't have the... I played those games growing up and enjoyed them a lot. And I played Quake and I played, you know, like... But it...
Damn, if
I think part of it is the surprise. Like, part of it really was playing it that first week when it was like, everybody thought, like, eh, whatever, I'm going to play this thing. And then being, like, pleasantly surprised by it as opposed to being overhyped on it and then being like, okay, yeah, I get it. This is good. But, like, it's not quite the same experience, maybe.
I was going to say if an 80 gig game isn't winning me over, I'm pissed.
Yeah. That's
the game was huge. Cool.
I think if I, like, had... If I was playing, if Doom was a game I went out and spent $60 on to fill my time after work, I would be completely happy with it. But it was a game I spent $60 on to evaluate it in a critical way a week before the end of the year. I guess I owned it before that. But do you know what I mean? Like, there's a distinction between, like, a game I play for pastime, and which in which I think it's I would be very happy with it. I would have gladly continued to play it. And a game where it was like, I have all this other stuff I'm supposed to get to. I'm not super, and like, that's a shame.
It was more of an obligation for you to play.
Right? There's other stuff that I was obligated to play that I think I would have liked. Like, the new Call of Duty I never got around to this year. I feel bad about
that. It's good because I hear it's super good.
And like, good. I like space a bunch and would probably like that game a whole lot. So I feel like it was just obligation. It was interest. Like, I think the speed of Doom is really appealing. And I think that the, like, I can look at all of those decisions that they made as designers and be like, that's a good-ass decision. But it just didn't hit me the way it hit. I'm glad I'm getting all this out there before Patrick comes back. it's one of those things of just like, maybe if that had hit me, like the way people talk about that game, or even maybe if I had played a lot of Hitman this year or something, that would have been the thing that makes me think like, oh, 2016, best year of games ever. But like, when I think about it compared to like the years that people hold up as like the best video game years of the past, I'm curious what we'll think about it. And I don't know which I would rather have. To get back to your actual question that I swerved off of, I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, what about you, Danica?
I feel like having one game. So this is an example that I feel like I was the only person, one of the only people who felt like this in 2013, but Ni No Kuni was like the game that year that like I felt changed my year.
Right,
like
right.
Yeah.
And I feel like having that experience, and like if The Last Guardian could give me that experience, that would be freaking awesome. But I feel like having that experience is like more valuable to me personally than playing like 20 games and being like, okay, that was fun.
Right.
I agree.
Maybe I won't play those again. Who knows?
I think like politically, I want there to be the thing where it's like, there's 1,000 really cool games and all of them touch me a little bit, because like that suggests a more vibrant and sustainable kind of development industry, right? Where it's like, oh, wow, like a bunch of people were able to make games and make rent this year and are doing cool things, and that's going to help the medium continue to grow and prosper because people are going to do exciting new stuff. And like, so like, I think politically that's what I want. But when I think about the games that have touched me the most, it's their years, like the one that you just described, Danica, of just like, oh, wow, Mass Effect just, like, devoured my life that year. Like, I just gave over that year to Mass Effect.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
No, they're not. But you pose them as mutually. You asked me which one of the two I would like. You're right. They don't have to be.
I would like both. But I think having that experience that, like, changes my year is more important to me, like, on a personal level.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Totally. Totally. Then just, like, there always being a new stream of decent games. What about you, Danielle?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I love, I mean, the way we all play games as, you know, people who cover games has to be like that. It has to be the buffet. It can never be the one meal. I mean, maybe we get a game that's like that. Like last year, Witcher 3, I put more than 100 hours into it. You know, right, I actually really, you know, it was up till 5 a lot playing that game for sure and loved that. But you can't do that with more than like one or two games, and it has to be something that's that amazing to you. So in terms of, I mean, I agree with that. I want there to be sustainable stuff. I want people to make a million weird and cool things. And when I start getting bored with games, you know, when I start getting a little jaded, that's when I go to something like Itch.io and I play tiny stuff, tiny weird stuff, and I get excited again about people making weird stuff. But I agree. I want to fall in love. Like, I want to, you know, throw everything to the wind and fall in love with something and be obsessed with it. Like, that's a feeling that I think we all I think that's why a lot of us play games. We're chasing that dragon a little bit sometimes, totally. And occasionally the dragon gives back. So, you know.
Occasionally, the dragon gives back.
It's like that. It's like that with
quotes. This episode, you punch cards. Yeah, that's very the title. Heartwarming. Yeah, occasionally, the dragon gives back.
Occasionally, the dragon gives back. With that, I'm gonna ask something else to give me something back, which is the question bucket.
Ooh,
I need you to
give us something.
So I'm actually gonna start at the top. It's Monday. I skim from the top.
Yep.
Friday we go deep.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna start with the first question that came in 2017. Here, which comes in from DW in Seattle, who says, "The end of the year has come and gone, and with it various Game of the Year discussions. As an enthusiast, I love to read people's Game of the Year lists, but as a game player, I often struggle to round out the year with a list of 10 favorite games that were actually released in the year. I find, as someone who is not part of the gaming press, that I rarely will buy, play, or experience a game in the year that it is released, let alone in the month, week, or day. With sales from vendors like Itch.io and Steam, I usually find a lot of older games that are fantastic, but never get covered at any of the outlets. Some examples being Valdis Story, Defender's Quest, Fairy Bloom, Frieza. Yep, Fairy Bloom, Big
You've
Frieza.
Seen Dragon Ball.
Uh-huh, there, okay. I went different. I went New Orleans, like, yeah.
That
okay.
was good.
Way of the Samurai 4, which Austin should totally play. I've played Way of the Samurai 4. I'm a big Way of the Samurai fan. Obviously, hundreds of games come out every year, and it's impossible for any site to cover more than a handful at a time, but it leads me to wonder, how much value is there in covering a game that may have slipped through the cracks? Would press sites benefit from having a dedicated person to look for wonderful games that may not have gotten much attention? Much luck in the new year, DW from Seattle." So I think there's like a bunch of different questions here tied up into what seems like one question, which range from like, hey, don't small games need more attention, to like, hey, what is the publishing practices of massive media corporations? what are your, you know, and that's tough. I think we do this in one way or two, in a couple of ways, which is like, well, we get a really good pitch about a game that we've missed. I'll totally consider it. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of pitches, so you can't publish everything you pitch. Like, that would be incredible, but which is not a thing you can do.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to make that decision of like, well, what's the news peg here? What's the, you know, there's a thing in journalism called a nut graph, which is like the paragraph in, that's the paragraph in which you kind of say like, hey, here's why you should care about this. Here's what the news relevancy is here. Like, here's why you should give a fuck. And I don't believe that every piece needs a nut graph. I don't believe that every piece should need a news peg. But for bigger, longer things, which is what people pitch us, it's hard to justify putting budget, resources, and time, you know, into something like that. Like to put it into a slot where our audience is just literally not going to engage with it. Every now and then, something can get through. We obviously have our free play feature, which is about games that you can play for free on the internet, and those don't have to be pegged to anything ever. And again, like if someone gives me like a really fucking good pitch for something like that can do it. But also, the way that those pitches look good normally is like, it's because there's a really smart peg. There's something really smart to tie that story into. Like, hey, you know, the Yakuza games are coming out. I want to talk about Shenmue 2. Right? Like, that's sort of thing that's like, oh, well, right, yeah, Shenmue 2 is super not relevant right this second. But because of Yakuza 0, because of the Shenmue 3 Kickstarter, because of this or that, there's going to be an audience that's interested in what you're saying about Shenmue 2 right now. So that's the like sad, realistic answer, I guess.
But there's also the part of this where if somebody's really passionate about something, that passion will show through. And that will show in the writing. So, you know, if somebody's really excited about something, there's something that really speaks to them or whatever, it's like, it doesn't matter how small it is. Like, that's going to show, like, and somebody's going to also feel that way, even if it's a small amount of people. So
also, I've gotten 100 pitches about Earthbound in the last year. Like, I'm not, like, which is to say that, like, passion is incredible. Also, check to see if the thing you're pitching has been written before.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
There is, it is really hard to be, like, one of the things I think is very true about criticism and about being in the press, in the enthusiast press, is that we have a duty to show the small things that don't get covered. Like, I absolutely believe that, which is why I do, like, one of the things that I will pay attention to is like, oh, wow, no one's written about this cool little thing. But I also do think that there is the difficulty of, like, how do you convey, how do you translate passion into, like, good writing?
Yes.
Which is actually going to tie
into
literally the next question from Evan Noggle, who writes, this summer I started playing Brigador, that isometric mech game that Austin played for an unfinished on Giant Bomb a while back. For a whole number of reasons, that game clicked with me hard, and it's quickly becoming one of my favorite games. Unfortunately, that game sold very poorly, the devs' words, so finding other people to talk about that game with has been super hard. I've managed to convince a few people to check it out, but nobody got hooked the way I did. At times, it feels like I'm standing on a subway platform shouting my message at passengers as the trains fly by. Have you ever experienced something so good that you tried to get people into it just so you could finally have an in-depth conversation with someone about it? Thanks, and keep up the good work, Evan Noggle. Listen, man, I started a tabletop gaming podcast after years of wishing I had people to play tabletop games with. So, like, yeah, I've been there. But
we did an idle weekend that was just totally about that question. We did a whole episode on sort of advocacy and, like, the games you love so much that you shout... it's like you have flyers for the thing, and not in a selling it way, not in a, like, oh, I'm PR for this game, but in
I understand.
Like, this thing is beautiful, and it touched me, and
why is no one paying attention?
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I think for me, like, that's what connects back up to that passion question of, like, how do you sell something that you're super passionate on to somebody? How do you shine a light on it in a way that's actually going to draw attention to it and not draw attention to the fact that you love it? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's... That can be a difficult thing.
This is like a thing, and I know that this isn't related to games, but this is a thing we experienced at back when I was at Crunchyroll when we were trying to decide on licensing JoJo, and Victoria and I were like, love JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Right. We had seen how, you know, devoted and dedicated the fan base was. Like, we were on Tumblr, we knew, and we fought, like, so hard. We're like, we got to get this, like... People need to know that this exists. People need to, like, watch it. And we convinced the licensing team to get it. And it, you know, it didn't perform. It was, you know, kind of similar. Super similar. But it did not go the way we expected it to go.
Right. And that can be tough. Like, that's the difficult thing here is, like, when you're in this position of, like, oh, okay, I can green light X projects, or I can green light 10 projects for this period of time. I'm going to make sure that, like, a handful of them are something that I believe in, even if I don't think it'll do well, right?
Yeah,
like, that is a thing we you know, we don't have the calculus for it in that way, right? But, like, when I say, Danielle, can you do me a favor and write up this bit about why James Burns, who's a producer here at Vice, is going into solitary confinement for a month to live stream it. When I ask you to write that up, it's not because I think it'll do super well. Right. It's because I want to use our platform to support something really cool, or something really what I think is really thoughtful and important. You know, that is like, in some senses, you take the L there. Right? You're like, all right, this isn't going to be a thing that blows up and does us good traffic. And that's totally okay. Or even something like, you know, we ran a piece by Moira McCammon on games that utilize Guantanamo Bay a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, that was a great piece.
It's a pretty good piece. And, like, not pegged to any specific news story, right? Like, no, outside of, I think it's important that we talk about Guantanamo Bay and, like, the way in which that it is gamified. That's an interesting thing. But you have to figure out what either how do you translate. I think that's a really good piece in which she's translated her academic passion into a wider audience, like, interest piece, in a way that's like, oh, hey, I'm really passionate about this thing, but I'm not making about my passion. I'm making about the qualities of the game or the qualities of this thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So that's one way you do it. And then the other thing there is just, like, I as a publisher have to then say, like, okay, because of that, like, I have to make sure we also are doing something this week so that the audience growth team doesn't give me bad looks. You know? And, like, it's a
There's a weird balance.
It's the same, really, across all media journalism.
Yeah, totally. I don't think it's like a Vice only thing that people have, like, we don't even have like specific traffic goals where it's like this week you need this many people, but it's like, hey, show us that you're like, what's your strategy here? Like, what's your plan here? And then, yeah, to talk to the Brigador thing specifically, it's like you said, Danielle, how do you turn it, how do you be an advocate for something you love without it turning into kind of PR style, like selling, you know, or without, for me, the other side is like, again, like making it hard for someone to want to get in on it. I think a lot of the Undertale fandom was kind of rough around that when that game first launched, where like, I fucking love Undertale. I very nearly never played Undertale because I was afraid that if I didn't like it, I had friends who were like such huge converts that they I would want to disappoint them. Like
I played it this year because I was like so scared.
Right. Yeah. Listen, they'll come for you. And then
I know.
They won't. That game is really and so like that game was really cool, but like the overwhelming positivity is not always the best way to do it. Like for me, the way I try to convince someone that a game is really good, there's like a couple of ways. One, I take lots of notes. and then I convert those notes into something that is about the game and is about the context that the game comes out in. And then ideally, I'm looking at the person I'm talking to individually and I'm saying, here's why I think you would like this. Like, hey, here's a thing you liked. Let me tie that to the thing that I think is cool for you to like. And then also sometimes I just don't try to sell things to people. Like, there's lots of shit that I like that I don't think anybody else should like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And sometimes just talking about it, like hearing you talk about Hitman, for example, sometimes just talking about it because you feel like talking about it, you're not trying to sell it, you just played it and you like it, that is enough.
Right. Here's a cool thing that happened, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, totally. But like, For all of my like shouting about how good Invisible Ink is and how Invisible Ink needs to be on the top 10 list of 2015 and blah blah blah, I didn't actually like set out to try to like convince people I knew that they had to try Invisible Ink. If I saw them starting it, I'd say, oh wow, Invisible Ink's so good. Like, let me know when you're done playing. I'm really excited to talk to you about it. But like, overselling it directly, like, I know that that's a thing for certain people. Like, if you play Weird Tactical games, if you like cyberpunk stuff, like, yeah, okay, there's an in there. But if that's just not what you play, it's just not what you play, and that's totally chill, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something I struggle with a lot because I'm just sort of a naturally very... It's pretty obvious. I get really excited when I love something, and so I'm always trying to be like, you know what, maybe it's not for everyone, but for me, this was amazing, and I'm never going to shut up about it because I can't help myself. I'm bursting with enthusiasm for the things that I love.
Yeah, I would never say, like, don't write about or scream about or, you know, shout about, not scream about, just shout about the stuff that you love. Like, of course, do that. But I think there's a big difference between that and, like, no, you don't understand.
Right.
You need to play this thing.
Arguing with people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Like,
what, really? This is what you're doing with your time? Come on. last question from the bucket today from Ben. With all of the end-of-the-year content, I was interested in more insight into how you folks view fan fiction in the context of creative works. While I'd describe my interest in fan fiction as generally disinterested, I feel people should use that creative energy making new and interesting stuff, not reusing existing things, ! I absolutely get people's attachments to characters, worlds, and stories and wanting to explore those spaces. There's also cases of fan fiction getting as big or bigger than the original material. For example, I heard that 50 Shades was originally Twilight fanfic minus all the supernatural stuff. it was just Twilight fanfiction, then when it blew up, or like when it blew up as fan fiction, she got a book deal. She had to strip out all of the supernatural.
Damn, I wish it would have stayed.
Actually really fascinating.
I wish it would have stayed as Twilight fanfic.
As another way to approach it, what do you think the Venn diagram would look like for people who dismiss professional writing with, you know, that's not real, right? Versus people who... professional wrestling with, you know, that's not real, right? Versus people who dismiss fan fiction with, you know, that's not canon, right?
Wrestling's real.
Wrestling is real. It's just also scripted. Like, actually, like, that's the thing, right? Like, wrestling is real. It's just also scripted.
Yeah.
And you know, I actually don't think people dismiss fan fiction with it's not canon. I don't think that it tends to be the dismissal. I think the dismissal is a lot more like Ben's dismissal, which is like, why aren't you making new original stuff? Or why are you, do you care so much about these characters' relationships? Where is the plot? Or, you know, that's not yours. You're not. Why are you wasting your time with that? You know?
Yeah.
I hear a lot of people basically calling it childish. Like,
yeah,
oh,
that's
these
huge
fun
thing.
Things in your imagination, but grow up and be a real person and like sports instead. You know, that kind of idea.
Write, I hear a lot of people who do say, like, don't write fan fiction if you're going to be, like, the only fiction that really matters is, like, completely new original stuff, which mm-hmm. is, like, a tricky path to walk down, because, like, then real quick you have to be mad at, like, lots of literary authors who either were pretty much writing fan fiction, where it's, like, things like Michael Crichton drawing on Beowulf, right? Yeah. And, like, writing
Eaters
of the Dead.
I mean, Shakespeare wrote fan fiction.
Like, Murasaki Shikibu's Tale of Genji is, like, engaging with other important narratives of her time, and that was, like, maybe the first novel that was ever written, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it was rewriting history and mythology. So, yeah. Like,
there's nothing
new, deep
friends.
That way. But
yeah.
Also, but also, right, exactly. So, like, first of all, you can make the, here's the one case you can always make is the history of literature is a history of fan fiction,
yes.
Over and over again. And that's one way you can go, and I think it's a valuable defense of fan fiction, because it reminds you that, in fact, there has never been a clear divide between fiction about things you own and fiction about a wider world. The other way you can go is fuck copyright. Our copyright system means that a lot of things that would be moving into the public domain, where people could be writing about them openly, that hasn't happened for a lot of properties, which is depending on what you think about it, either a thing that allows the companies to continue to harbor and protect and enshrine those great ideas. Like, it's why I'll never be able to write a Batman comic without DC's blessing. But also, real talk, I would write a pretty dope Batman comic.
Yeah. I would read your Batman comic.
I would.
I would. Else's.
Same.
But, like, the only
same.
Way that... Whereas I could probably write an okay Sherlock Holmes novel, and I could do that because Sherlock has moved into the public domain, yeah. I believe. If not him, then Poirot or some other detective. You know, whatever. And then there's also the defense that, like, chill. Like...
Yeah.
Let people... Do what they want, them be creative. Let people enjoy the things they like. Life is short. Like
as long as it's not a harmful thing. Like this isn't like diving into like an extremely widespread like Tumblr fandom headfirst. This is like reading something on your own time, like writing something like people don't have to read, you know.
Yeah. So I think that there is – so I guess the thing is, like, to one degree, I like producing these really productive defenses that say, oh, look, fiction. Fan fiction is part of the history of fiction, or fan fiction is really – it's really good because if you mm-hmm. want to become a professional game writer, guess what? You're going to constantly be writing characters you didn't invent. Or if you want to get into TV production or film, like, you know – The Marvel movies are written by people who never wrote those comics before. You know, outside of, I guess, Whedon had done some comics work. But, like, that stuff isn't necessarily... I'm not saying that's fan fiction, but it's only not fan fiction because it has a stamp of approval on it.
Right.
It's not the original authors, right? Like, comics is built on new writers moving in to write in that space.
Yeah.
TV does this all the time. You know, a television show's writer's room is, like, a bunch of people being like, what can we do with these established characters that's really cool. And that's awesome. And so I like that productive defense. But I also do just like the defense that says, like, I'm not here to justify fan fiction. I think fan fiction is, in its own rights, a productive pastime in which you get to stretch, like you said, your creative muscles and just be mm-hmm. creative and have stories. And, like, that's no less a valuable pursuit than writing new characters to me. Like, I don't think that is... And I say that after going through a long phase of my life that was very dismissive of fan fiction for all of those reasons.
Yeah.
And I tried to – eventually I pushed back on those ideas because I couldn't find grounding for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I thought original ideas were more valuable other than literally you can sell them for more.
Yeah.
All right? And at that point that the market is your kind of scale for what is and isn't valuable as writing, as literature – like, you done goofed. So, it's
and it's worth saying that there's also, with fan fiction, as with all kinds of fiction, as with every kind of art, there's like good and thoughtful art, and there's bad and shitty and thoughtless art too. There's probably revenge porn about every single imaginable, you know, character in the universe, and that doesn't
mean
like
saying,
it should be judged by the same general standard is
right.
My general.
Yeah, I'm not here saying like all fanfic is good and you should read all of it.
Go
read all fanfic. Do it. Go to AO3 right now and just like
read every piece on the internet right now.
Like, and I'm not even saying you need to engage with it at all, but I do think that, like the person who says they like all music except rap and country, like y'all just haven't listened to any rap or country, right? Yeah. Like that sort of blanket dismissal of an entire genre of creative work doesn't value you in any way. Like, all it does is close a door. Mm-hmm. And that's a really boring way to live. So that's my defense of fanfic.
It's a good defense.
We ran like 7 pieces, and people on Twitter were like, I opened up Waypoint the other day and I saw 30 pieces of fanfic. Like, dog, you didn't. Dude, my dude.
You saw one a day.
7.
You saw one day, pal.
Shout outs to all of our incredible fanfic writers,
who and artists and everyone, incredible artists and
the people who just wrote really great articles for us or who contributed to all the superlatives. Shout outs also to you if you came and read. If you didn't, you can go to waypointadvice.com, which is a website on the internet where you can read our end of the year coverage, which included everything from I guess if you missed it, it was a special crossover alternate universe fanfic world in which all of the video game characters from 2016 hung out together and snuck away to get high in the tennis courts and all sorts of other stuff. And there's incredible art and articles that ranged from real fanfic of characters hanging out to thoughtful, you know, essays on the state of violence in games, or the a really great reported piece from Ian Williams about the state of the SAG-AFTRA voice actor strike. Mm-hmm. All dressed up in the Waypoint High kind of clothes, and it was really fun and nice. I really appreciate all the. There were also lots of really positive things people said, so thank you for all of those.
Everybody got straight A's.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, almost
except
everybody.
For detention. Detention oh, yeah. got a.
Yeah. Except for detention. Detention yeah. did not. Yeah. Except for yeah. We yeah. Uh huh.
Everybody else
Thank
got
you
straight
so much.
A's.
Everybody else. Then they all graduated, and we'll
Yay.
See them in the future.
Yay.
Danica, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at twitter.com/waypoint.
And almost Yay. Second.
And where you can find all of our end of the year stuff, because I've been pushing it a bunch, and you can find my my actual Twitter at Danica Herod,
like the department store.
Yeah, like the race car driver plus the department store. No, but Danica with a K.
So not like the race car driver.
Not like the race car driver. No,
close.
Where
though.
Can people find the rest of Waypoint stuff on the internet?
Twitter.com/Waypoint, Facebook.com/WaypointVice, YouTube.com/WaypointVice, Instagram.com/WaypointVice. Yeah. Everywhere is Waypoint or Waypoint Vice. We have a great subreddit. It's /r/WaypointVice.
We have a fan Discord, which I think
we
is
have a fan Discord. Yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, I should get it posted. Let me chat with the mods and I'll get it posted. It's a rambunctious and wonderful group.
It's really good.
It is
good.
True.
I check in I lurk all the time.
I'm a lurker. So I'm a serious lurker.
Yeah.
And then you can find me at Austin_Walker and at Austin Walker Games on Facebook.
Woo!
Yay!
Austin Walker Games.
Austin Walker Games.
What about
Games?
You? Danielle.
You can find me, Danielle R.I., on Twitter, and Danielle Riendo Writer on Facebook. And I think I need to just connect my Twitter to my Facebook so that there are things.
That's what I did. And then the thing I learned was that
it breaks the posts, right?
It breaks the posts. There's no context. That's the big problem.
Yeah.
Which I learned because there was a meme going around this week. Did you see this meme this week?
No.
No.
So Kate Gray, who is a writer for us, she wrote a fanfic for us this week, and she's been a really good freelancer for us over the last year, started this hot Twitter meme the other day, which was, go into your phone and start a new message and use the autocomplete to finish a sentence begins.
Yeah.
And the sentence begins, my 2017 will be something like that, right? And mine was... My 2017 will be a good friend, and I am so sorry for the fact that I have to go live with my God, and God, I wish I had a good friend. And that was posted with no context at all on Facebook. And someone said, Jesus Christ, Austin, this sounds like a note, and you can't see context on Facebook. I almost got a heart attack. Miguel, I'm sorry that I almost gave you a heart attack. It's a meme. It was a meme.
It's a meme.
It's just a meme. You can find us on Facebook.
Baby Shoes Never Worn shit right there. That's intense. Mm-hmm. Right
that's
there.
Intense. And my Facebook needs a good friend. So you can find it at Austin Walker Games. You can find us, waypoint.vice.com, waypoint.zone, bazinga.zone, digitalpyramids.com. You can find out info about the song that you're hearing in the future, maybe in a few seconds from now, Miss You by Boen at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Thanks to Tim Barnes, who I think is going to engineer this one for us, because I got an email when we started recording, Danielle,
Sweet.
Like, oh, hey, yeah, I could totally make this a podcast for you.
Hell yeah.
And shout outs to 2017.
Yes.
Be better.
Here we go.
I'm putting a lot on 2017's shoulders. Do you know what I mean? Like, 2016 was like the bad older sibling. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
like, God, things went bad with 2016. So I understand 2017. I'm putting a lot on your shoulders to be the follow-up, or you have to live in the shadow of your bad older brother, and you have to be like, am I going to be good or bad?
I'm feeling like this is hitting way too close to home for me. So on that note...
Thank you, Internet, and have a good week. We'll see you on Friday. Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.